President Trump says the U.S. Navy will spend money to build new warships.
The president announced he will name those ships after himself, days after a board that he leads put his name on the Kennedy Center. The Navy's taxpayer-funded tribute to Trump is expected to cost billions of dollars per ship. Trump announced his plan for the U.S. Navy to honor him during a rambling press event as top aides stood by.
NPR national security correspondent Quill Lawrence is here to break this down. Good morning, Quill.
Good morning, Leila.
So why was the president talking about shipbuilding in the first place?
I mean, there's a general consensus that the U.S. has lost its ability to build ships quickly, if at all. Okay. So this announcement about ramping up production has kind of been anticipated. But Trump talked quite lyrically about this new class of battleship that would have guns and missiles and high-powered lasers. There were artist renderings that were shooting lasers. He mentioned a sea-launched nuclear missile capability, and he said they'd be 100 times more powerful than previous ships. And he said they would be built with robots, but also with American workers. The president said he would start by building two of these battleships and then ramp up to 10. And then he said there would be 20 or maybe 25. Didn't give a real time frame. And as, you know, is his habit, he mentioned a lot of different numbers as his Secretary of Defense and Secretary of State, Secretary of the Navy stood by for this hour-long press event.
Okay, so a lot of big claims there about lasers and being so powerful. When we first heard of yesterday's press event, people expected some announcement about the U.S. pressure campaign against Venezuela. Did that come up at all?
Yeah, a reporter asked if U.S. sanctions and military action have been about forcing Maduro out. And here's what Trump said.
We have a massive armada formed, the biggest we've ever had, and by far the biggest we've ever had in South America. He could do whatever he wants. It's all right. Whatever he wants to do. If he wants to do something, if he plays tough, it'll be the last time he's ever able to play tough.
Trump didn't answer when the journalist asked what his end game was, what happens if Maduro does fall. And I have to say it was reminiscent of moments 20-some years ago when people were asking what the end game plan was for Iraq post-invasion.
Right.
But Trump also defended the lethal attacks on these small boats the U.S. says are carrying drugs. We're now at over 24 of those strikes. They've killed over 100 people. There was another one announced just last night, killed one more person. And now we're talking about bigger boats, not the battleships, but massive oil tankers that the U.S. Coast Guard has started seizing.
Yeah, and on that note, what about the third oil tanker we've been hearing about, Quill, the one that the Coast Guard is chasing?
Yeah, already twice this month, the U.S. has boarded and seized a tanker. One's now docked in Texas. And one of the tankers was on the list of sanctioned ships. The other wasn't. So it's not clear what the legal framework is for taking them. And now there's this third possibility of, well, what if a ship refuses to be boarded? Do you blow that up as well? But what exactly are the rules of engagement here? Do you kill the crew? We're really in uncharted territory. But the president wasn't really focused on those details or really focused on Venezuela. Over the hour, he made threats toward the president of Colombia. He was dismissive but talked at length about the Epstein files. He talked about Obamacare subsidies, healthcare subsidies. And he revived his assertion that the U.S. needs to take over Greenland for national security reasons.
NPR's Quill Lawrence. Thank you, Quill.
My pleasure, Leila.
A federal judge has ruled the deportations of more than 100 Venezuelans to El Salvador were illegal.
Judge James Boasberg found the U.S. government violated due process rights and that the men deserve a hearing. Early in the Trump administration, the United States deported numerous men to a prison in El Salvador after President Trump invoked the Alien Enemies Act. The judge's ruling against that comes just as the detainees have received extra attention. The new head of CBS News, Barry Weiss, stopped the network from broadcasting interviews with former detainees on 60 Minutes over the weekend. The story still streamed in Canada, and on Monday, the block story showed up on social media across the United States.
NPR immigration correspondent Jimena Bustillo is covering the ruling about CECOT detainees and is with me now in studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Leila.
So just break down exactly what this order said from Judge James Boasberg?
Essentially, he has ordered the administration to return the men to the United States or provide some sort of due process hearings for them, even if that's abroad. And it's not necessarily clear how the government would facilitate this. The original lawsuit was brought by six men in that group mentioned earlier, and Boasberg certified the class in his order. And by doing that, they can represent the entire group of about 137 men who were removed to El Salvador. Remember, these were Venezuelan men that the Trump administration quickly removed from the country overnight back in the spring. Boasberg says that any government can't be, quote, secretly spiriting individuals to another country without any oversight.
Yeah, and it's been very shocking to see the treatment these men say they went through in a foreign anti-terrorism prison. We'll get into that treatment later. Just remind us, though, I mean, we mentioned the Alien Enemies Act. What legal authority the Trump administration alleged that allowed them to do this here?
Right. They say that they can use this 18th century law. Steve mentioned earlier the Alien Enemies Act. That's a wartime power. You know, the White House has accused the men without evidence presented in court of being members of the Venezuelan gang Tren de Aragua. The deportations prompted several legal fights over the use of this law. And it brought to the forefront also the administration's clashes with judges. Boasberg was among the judges to first question the use of the Alien Enemies Act to deport Venezuelans in this way. And the judge has threatened the government with contempt for disobeying his order to stop the planes.
There's been a lot of legal back and forth here over the fate of these men. What do we know about where they are now?
You know, the men, again, were originally from Venezuela, not El Salvador, and they have since been returned to their home country after 4 months in the prison. And, you know, this was done as a part of a prisoner exchange with the United States. Since they've recounted to NPR and other news outlets what they experienced in Sikhot, and this includes poor nutrition, unsanitary conditions, even sexual abuse. One man spoke to my colleague Sergio Martinez Beltran and described Sikhot as, quote, hell on earth.
And where does the case go from here?
You know, it's likely that the government will move forward with appealing the decision, though we have not received an immediate response to a request for comment. Lawyers for the men say this ruling makes it, quote, clear the government can't just send people off. You know, one other thing to watch for is the Trump administration's political rhetoric around this case, because Boasberg has been among the judges to receive the ire of Trump. And this is among the cases where the Trump administration has accused judges of being activists and wielding a partisan agenda.
NPR's Ximena Bustillo. Thank you, Ximena.
Thank you.
Some leaders at the influential think tank behind Project 2025 have left.
Yeah, the think tank is the Heritage Foundation, and the former staff are joining a different group founded by former Vice President Mike Pence. This marks a division within the Republican Party as it debates who should speak for them and what they should stand for.
NPR political correspondent Sarah McCammon has been following all this and what it means for the GOP. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning.
So who are these Heritage Foundation staff members and why are they leaving?
Well, so far, at least 13 former Heritage staffers have exited the organization. They're joining Advancing American Freedom, which is the think tank founded by former Vice President Mike Pence. And among that group are three senior leaders who were in charge of the legal, economic, and data teams at Heritage. And Leila, this is really just the latest chapter in what's been an ongoing battle over the future of the conservative movement and the MAGA movement around issues like the role of far-right online influencers who've promoted anti-Semitism and other extremist ideas. And you may remember those tensions were on display recently at Heritage after its president, Kevin Roberts, released a video defending Tucker Carlson's friendly interview back in October with Nick Fuentes, who is an avowed white nationalist and has previously praised Adolf Hitler, among other things. Roberts' statement at that time sparked controversy inside Heritage that later prompted him to apologize for it. And then, Leila, just a few days ago, there was a very public clash between some prominent conservatives at Turning Point USA's annual conference in Phoenix. So this mass exodus from Heritage is just another signal of how divisive these issues have become.
And tell us about where they're going.
So Pence's group, Advancing American Freedom, has been a relatively small organization, but they appear to be making a play here for a bigger leadership role at a moment when the movement is divided. This move dramatically expands the organization's size. They're going from 18 employees to more than 30. And the group's president, Tim Chapman, told me this is a battle to define the future of conservatism and the Republican Party.
I think what's happening right now is that a movement that has oriented it around political personalities and specific political leaders is starting to realize that those leaders are not going to be here forever. Whether it's President Trump or other leaders, there is an end date on their leadership.
And he says Pence's group hopes to bolster support for traditional conservative ideas like free trade and a less isolationist foreign policy.
And what about the Heritage Foundation? How are they responding to all of this?
I mean, Heritage is still a large and influential group. They, of course, are the organization behind Project 2025, as we heard, the plan that's helped shape many Trump administration policies. But it has been a tumultuous time for Heritage. Their chief advancement officer, Andy Olivostro, argues that Heritage is under scrutiny precisely because it's relevant.
It's crystal clear to me that Mike Pence is still waiting for a train back to relevance, and that isn't coming. Heritage is already down the tracks. We're leading and we're building something that will last.
And as a reminder, Pence unsuccessfully challenged Trump and others for the GOP nomination in 24, and he's been at odds with the MAGA movement since January 6th, 2021, when he certified the results of the 2020 election. So there are significant fissures which appear likely to widen as Republicans start thinking about their future after Donald Trump.
NPR's Sarah McCammon, thank you.
Thank you.